Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Levler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning is the Suffolk County Presiding Officer, Kevin McCaffrey. Kevin, thanks for joining us this morning.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you again for inviting me back.
Yeah, no, it's always great to have these conversations and, you know, a lot of ground to cover this morning. But maybe we can just start with, like we normally do, a little bit about your history, how you got involved in this world and you know, a little bit of, you know, always very interesting to me, a little bit of the history on the union side as well.
Yeah, so it has been an interesting route for me to get here. I started by just getting involved in my community and in my civic association. I turned around and became the president without even knowing it of the civic association. I was moved into the village of Lyndhurst after I got married in 1984, and I got involved in local government there. Lyndhurst Village is the only village in Suffolk County and Nassau that runs as Republicans and Democrats. I came from Oyster Bay, from the town of Oyster Bay, Massapequa, right, is where I grew up, and my family was involved in politics there. My uncle is the state Supreme Court judge, and so we'd gotten used to it. And when I moved there, someone said, hey, you know people, why don't you get involved? I did in a mayoral election in 1988 and helped them unseat a 16-year incumbent. And 2 years later, they asked me to run for the village board in Lyndhurst. And so I stayed on the village board from 1990 to before I was elected to the legislature in 2014. Had a parallel career in the union movement as well. Sure. I was a truck driver. I worked for Roadway Express. And I got involved. Someone asked me to be the shop steward there. I took the opportunity to do that. And in 1994, there was a group of got together and said, look, we're not happy with the direction that Local 707 is going, mm-hmm, and our mm-hmm. Teamsters Local. And we want you to get involved. You know, you've had experience in government and budgeting, et cetera. And we want you to run for Secretary Treasurer on our slate. And I did, and we won. Eventually in 2000, I became the president and of that union, mm-hmm. Which I still am today as we speak. Sure. And so I've kind of had a parallel career in union politics as well as on the governmental side. It's been an interesting ride, but it gives me a good perspective on my job as the presiding officer and as a legislator as well, sure, to prepare me well for this.
Sure. I think I'd be doing you a disservice if I didn't mention the fact that you are also amazingly well-versed in healthcare. You know, your involvement in that whole scene, you know, not just on the behalf of your local, but the International Foundation, all these employee benefit funds and various plans from, you know, across the world all gathered together. And you're one of the instructors. You teach some of the top level courses. So.
Yeah, thank you. And it's great to see, because I know AME and a lot of the other municipal unions in Suffolk County go there to get their education. And it's one of the things that I believe, and I know you do as well, that sure, one of the most important things we do for our members is the benefits that we provide, whether that be on the medical benefits and all the ancillary benefits and, sure, and the pension benefits. So it wasn't, I saw that early on, got involved, got an education in that, and I'm happy to pass on whatever I picked up along the way, yeah, to other people.
So. Yeah, yeah. I just got my master trustee cert or whatever, I guess whatever it is, some formal paperwork, yeah, I got from them, which means I've gone to enough classes to land myself in plenty of trouble if I do something wrong. But it's always great to have, you know, I mean, there's a lot of great instructors in that whole system, but it's always great to have a familiar face, yeah, familiar topics. And, you know, I just wanted to bring that up. But getting into the presiding officer job. So, you know, not only are you a legislator that represents your district,
yes,
and not only are you a member of your caucus, your side of the aisle, so to speak, legislatively, but you're the presiding officer, which means all of those jurisdictions and all of the legislators kind of, that's all part of your work.
Yes, and there's more to it than I thought. You know, there's a lot of, you have 18 different legislators and you have 18 different personalities, and they kind of have control over their staffs and, mm-hmm, and what they do. But I'm the one that has to oversee that and make sure it all works seamlessly.
Right.
And it's not always as easy as it seems. And but we get it done, and look, everybody's a we have a good group of legislators there,
sure.
and we the most important thing is to serving the our constituents, and it doesn't matter what district you're in, if you're all the way out on the east end or in the west end of the county, like myself, or sure. Republican or Democrat, we all work together to make sure we provide constituent services in the legislature, and that's the most important thing that we
sure.
do.
You know, I like to point out something I know you're keenly aware of and your colleagues as well, but generally speaking, when someone's elected in a district, some people voted for them, some people didn't. There's that political philosophy that does or doesn't jive with certain groups of people for whatever reason, and when it comes down to it, you have to serve everybody's need. It doesn't matter what their political affiliation is. It's what they need, and it's a little more complex than that, right? Like, that sounds complex enough to me, but I happen to know because we've been involved in issues, and those issues might have, you know, brought in Long Island Federation of Labor, might have brought in the building trades, myself as AME rep, you know, other county unions coming in, and all of us having, you know, maybe different opinions and thoughts on how, you know, a particular issue could be addressed. And then there's obviously there's constituents, there's the business community needs, all of these things, a big, complicated pile. It's never as easy as, you know, walking in, you know, I mean, we've had countless conversations, but I've never really been able to just walk in and say, hey, Mr. Presiding Officer, here's what I see, here's how I think we can fix it, without you having the common sense and practical reaction of saying, well, there are other people on the other side of this issue, and they have good points, too. And so it's always conversations, a lot of talking, a lot of listening and understanding. And, you know, again, you multiply that across all the districts because all of not just the personalities, but the peoples those personalities represent. You know, it's a daunting task. But, you know, I mean, they've trusted you with this job. They've put you back in. I'm very hopeful that they continue to do so. It's been great working with you. You know, it's as complicated as I made that all sound, there's days where you make it look easy.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I appreciate you acknowledging that it can be a difficult task at times. There's a lot of moving parts, as we like to say, a lot of constituencies out there. And I like to think I do a pretty good job of listening to people. And, you know, we won't always agree on things because you can't satisfy everybody. Because as you said, everyone has divergent opinions about specific issues, but we try and find that middle ground and at the end of the day, do what's right for the people of Suffolk County and, most importantly, the people that work for Suffolk County.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's very important. And I want to talk about the people that work for Suffolk County quite a bit more. But, you know, before we get into that, let's just talk about the 14th Legislative District where you represent, what kind of projects and initiatives you've really been focusing on for your area.
Yeah, so my district is in Lindenhurst, North Lindenhurst, West Babylon, and now I'm getting the southern part of Copaig and Amity Harbor, and of course the Barrier Beaches, which is south of the Great South Bay.
Sure.
And one of the most important things that people come to me about and concerned about is public safety. And mm-hmm. that is the most often that I hear. We have a lot of issues out there that are occurring. Some don't always make the news as much as others do.
Right.
But they're concerned and they want to see more police out there. They want to make sure that they have a presence out there. They don't want to have the same sort of problems that are happening in New York City. One of the biggest issues, I know it's a little bit of a powder keg, is the migrant issue. And
sure.
you see, New York City mm-hmm. is bursting at the seams. And, mm-hmm. and they are looking to sue other municipalities to be able to make sure, to be able to place migrants or asylum seekers, they're being called, to in other counties. And myself and I know Bruce Blakeman in Nassau County have said, look, we don't want... We didn't say that we're a sanctuary city. We don't have a mandate that says we have to house every person that has is homeless, especially people that are not citizens of the United States in here. And so that's a lot of pushback. We've been pushing on that. It's going to be a demand on our services, police, mm-hmm. fire, our schools, all the municipal services that we provide. So that's a real big issue out there. People concerned about the environment. They're concerned about the water that they drink. Mm-hmm. They're concerned about the nitrates that are coming in from up north. You know, my district, for the most part, except for the Barrier Beaches, is sewered, and we've had them for many years. And the Great South Bay is better for it. and our drinking water is a little bit better protected. But at the end of the day, if we don't protect the waterways north of us, it comes down, whether it be, you know, the Carls River, et cetera, it's going to come into the Great South Bay and cause algae blooms. What's happening in Oakdale and Sayville areas where we've had those issues there. So the biggest thing we have is public safety. They want to be able to, you know, protect the environment, and I'm very concerned about that. And they want to make an affordable place to live. Sure. You know, we don't want to have you know, parents moving out of here or young people moving out of here because they can't afford to live here. No one's leaving because they don't like the beaches. They're moving ahead because they can't afford to live here. Mm-hmm. And we have to make sure that we find that right balance of you know, giving them young people the opportunities to stay here, places to live, and in an affordable manner.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's so much to unpack there, you know. Public health, obviously, a mandate, you know, and that goes from all levels of government. Public safety, another mandate, all levels of government. And, you know, when we get to the affordability issue, there's no need to worry about public health and public safety if there's no public, right? If everybody's got to leave because they can't stay. So it's a question of striking that right balance, right? You know, and, you know, like I said earlier in the show, actually just a moment ago, I did want to talk about public employees in general, you know, and universally, you know, I'm seeing coast to coast, counties, states, other localities, anything in government, you know, that we're all facing the same crisis, which is folks aren't taking the jobs the rate they used to. And there was some efforts on the state level. You know, I think their solve was, well, let's make it easier to get the job. Well, when the job was really difficult to get, people were going out of their way to get the job. They were working twice as hard, three times as hard, you know, trying to find any sort of way possible to get the job. So to me, that was never the fix. And I, you know, I would speak in Albany about this, say, this is not the fix. The fix isn't, let's make the qualifications lower. Let's make it easier for people to get these jobs. There's something to that, right? There really is. I'm not going to discount it entirely and be a hypocrite. There is, there are barriers that don't necessarily need to be there. And there's ways to show people what being a public employee is that you don't really see when you get a piece of paper. You go to, let's say you go to the Suffolk County website and you say, I'm interested in civil service, and you go in and they give you this job qualification and they give you some requirements and everything else. And they don't really spell out all the great things, right? But that being said, you know, if, and I've had these conversations with folks on all levels of government, if taking a job with government means that you're signing up to also get a second job, and that second job is going to be the one that actually pays the bills, and the public employee job is the one that you're going to, you know, use for health care, and you're going to use for, you know, to supplement your life, you know, making the civil service test easier isn't going to solve that problem, right? You're still going to need that second job. And then your best efforts aren't going to be applied to that job. And I think the public deserves, for what they're paying, they deserve the best of people, right? The best quality of candidates and their best efforts in their workday, as opposed to their second or third or, you know, whatever side money, you know, getting their best efforts. And this is a big problem. This is a big problem. One, you know, just on its face, you know, again, representing labor and saying, hey, we need to do better just on the compensation side. But compensation has to come from somewhere. And that comes down to affordability again. How do we put qualified candidates in the job and compensate them properly without putting the whole system out of whack and, you know, raising sales tax by, you know, $3, yeah. You know, $3 for every dollar. You know, like, it's a daunting problem. And I raise it in this specific way just to kind of illustrate for people the complexity of the job that you do. You know, it reflects on the complexity of the job that I do, but it defines the complexity of the job that you do, because you have to have this balance. You can't go back to businesses and say you have to bear this burden, because the businesses are just going to put it back on the consumers, and then the consumer bears the burden anyway, and therefore affordability drops even more. There's, you know, these are complicated problems that require a lot of thought, a lot of conversation, and, you know, but I think from my take, if government doesn't become an employer of choice, that become what it was 20, 30 years ago, where people were going out of their way to get these jobs, you're not going to have the quality applicants and therefore not going to have the quality services. So on one level, you can say, well, we held the line on taxes, and not you specifically, but anyone in elected office could say we held the line on taxes. but the quality of services keep dipping, right? And so it's a big, complicated problem. I don't think there's even a question in there. I just got up on my soapbox for a few minutes and ranted.
Well, you're not wrong. We've seen many instances where we have worked together to fix problems where we've seen we can't attract enough people or good people in these positions. And we work together to make sure that we can make adjustments in salaries. So, because the county loses if we don't attract good people.
Sure.
It loses if we can't get enough people and we have to contract those services out to somebody else, to a third party, where it's going to ultimately cost us more money.
Right.
These are good jobs with good benefits, mm-hmm. and you work hard and make sure that you maintain those benefits. You get an education in the benefit field, and you sit on the boards there to make sure that they don't get tinkered with and is good pensions at the end of the day. And not everybody has that, but that is the basis for where we start. But we need to look and fill in those gaps where we see we're not attracting enough good people in certain positions. And I think we've talked about where some of those need attention, and we're going to continue to work together to make sure we fill those gaps.
No, I mean, it is very important. You know, you raised the point of, bringing in third-party contractors, and there was someone that was speaking to the legislature recently, and their take was, and I don't know that I disagree, sometimes when you bring in these third-party people, they're as good as the last check you gave them, you know. Yeah. Their knowledge, their skills, everything just evaporates. You know, public employees are an investment in the public.
Yeah.
You know, they take that knowledge and their skills across a career spanning 30 years. Just highlighting the complexities of all of this.
Yeah, and they take ownership of it. And, mm-hmm. and I was going to mention it, you know, what we were talking about, which is, you know, the cyber attack. Well, look at how much money that costs the county. And it still continues to cost us, and a black eye that it gave us over this. We all realize now that there's more we could have done in terms of staffing and with people that take ownership of those jobs that are employed there and want to make sure things are right. And people work very hard in there. That is an area we said, you know what, we could have done more there to address that. And we found out the hard way.
Sure, sure. And, you know, I mean, I don't know of a department right now that wouldn't say we don't need any staff, right? We don't need any adjustments. And that's why I say it's so daunting. It's a big problem. Again, nationally, everybody's facing this. And this is, you know, something I raised in conversation with someone else the other day. You know, doing business in 2018 and doing business in 2023 are completely different. It's not, you know, pre-pandemic. Then we were kind of, you know, sheltering in place for a little bit and social distancing. And then now we're back to normal. This is a new reality. 2023 business and 2018 business, different. What the market is like, what employers and employees respond to, different. And we're all, you know, going through this new, it's maybe a more quiet crisis, but we're going through this crisis like we went through the cyber hack, like we went through COVID, like we've gone through all the various other things. And it's a work in progress, and it involves a ton of conversation.
Yep.
I guess this is either the best or worst possible time to raise, you know, coming up pretty soon is going to be the county budget. That's going to be a big thing. And, you know, I just want to point out from my perspective, we're going to have an outgoing administration, their term limited. They're going to be tasked with putting together a budget that someone else is going to inherit. The last time this happened was not great for Suffolk County. You know, we had an outgoing county executive that only funded the government for about 6 months. Tons of crises and problems and whatever else. And while we don't anticipate that this time around, there's got to be a lot of questions on the side of the legislature, you know, in terms of looking at this budget and making sure this budget is right, because it will be inherited by a new administration.
Well, that was a concern in the last administration, for sure, the last time we had a changeover. But one of the things that I like to think that I've done throughout my career is work across the aisle.
Sure.
And I've worked well with the county executive, Steve Ballone,
mm-hmm.
In even developing last year's budget.
Right.
There wasn't a lot of amendments to the budget because, you know what, we sat down, we talked about it. What do we both need here? What's going to work? And we got it done. And same thing with the capital budget. So my expectation is that the county executive will work with myself and other leaders and on the budget committee, to the operating budget, to do the same thing this year.
Right.
So We have priorities. He respects those priorities. He understands that he's termed out to some things that he'd like to do before he leaves.
Right.
And I think we can work together to get those done, and he appreciates that, and I appreciate his cooperation.
And that, now you speak to from my perspective, the value of your leadership across the years. All of the different levels of government you've been involved in, all the stuff that you've done inside the labor movement, and all of that comes together in a presiding officer that knows how to sit down and get through difficult budgets. I mean, there were points in time under your leadership where there was question marks on the budget, you know, in terms of will the money be there? You know, what are we going to do? What's happening after COVID? What's, you know, going on during COVID? You know, all of these various things. But your ability to sit down, work across the aisle, find alliances, ways to get everybody a little something of what they need, to keep the world moving, I mean, that's a big deal.
It's building consensus, and it's something that I do each and every day, and that you do each and every day, and that has served me well in the position I'm in now. So I feel very good about that, and I feel good about with the finances of the county right now. We're in better condition than we have been in 15 years.
Right.
And a lot of that was good fiscal management in the last few years, and a little bit of luck in terms of, you know, unexpected revenues and sales tax during COVID when we expected the sky to be falling. And also, let's not kid ourselves. We got a lot of money from the federal government through the American Rescue Plan, which we've used judiciously. You know, we have not gone on a spending spree. We paid back the debts that we owed. We owed over $300 million to the state pension fund. Sure. We had borrowed the money to meet our obligations. We didn't own the Denison building. But you know what? We now own the Denison building again. We paid back all those debts. We have money in over $250 million in a rainy day fund. We didn't have a cloudy day fund before, you know,
and not even human.
And no, yeah. We a lot of times we make payroll looking for loose change in the couch cushions, you know, but we're in a better place right now, and we need to stay there. And the biggest threat I tell unions to you is not anti-union movement. It's if you're working for an employer that cannot manage its finances.
Yep.
And we've been a victim of that just recently. One of our biggest employers on the Teamster side, a company called Yellow Freight, you know, declared bankruptcy. And it's almost 500 members in my local union and that are out of work right now. And their benefits will soon expire. So the biggest impact that could be, and you know that because your members felt it, is an administration that cannot properly handle its finances. But you have my guarantees that will be a priority for me, and I'll make sure that continues long into the future.
Well, that's why it's so great to work with somebody that understands. You know, again, it's something maybe not everybody listening understands, but if you're in the union movement, the solvency of your employer is just as important, right? You need to make sure that there is. So that's the balance, I guess, on the union side. You want to make sure that the employer isn't taking advantage of the employee, you know, making billions, trillions in profit. I'm talking these big, ginormous companies. We all know the names, so I don't have to say Amazon or anything like that.
No.
But, you know, they take all of this money and they don't give it back to their employees. And that's the push to have union representation and make sure there's that fair balance. But if the union pushes too far and the company has to fold, then everybody loses, right? The products don't get made. The money's not going back into the economy in the form of wages that get then spent in the community and everything else. So that is a very, you know, very excellent point, something I wanted to just define a little better for our listeners. And I just wanted to circle back on, you know, you talked about, you know, in previous budgets and some of the hard decisions that had to be made and being able to, you know, kind of solve for some of the debts that the county had. And what I want to point out, and you know, I mean, I try to put this in terms of like credit card debt. You know, if you don't pay your entire bill when it comes in, they're going to charge you everything you owe plus a percentage, right? And that's we call that debt service. Debt service in the county, when you owe $300 million back to the comptroller, although he's the government, he's charged with investing that money to make sure that the pensions are there at the time when employees retire. And if he can't invest that money because you didn't pay it, he's going to charge you what he thinks he could have gotten investment gains.
You're absolutely right.
And so it's debt service. You actually end up paying more. If the money was given to the comptroller, it would have grown in the market and it wouldn't have an effect on the taxpayer and it wouldn't have an effect on the municipality in quite the same way.
Right. And we wouldn't be behind the eight ball, I think, where we are now in terms of staffing levels and trying to fill gaps where we need to do it because we were always playing catch up.
Sure. All right. So listen, I mean, a lot we've discussed in terms of the budget, and that's, you know, it's a big help to know that we're working with folks like you, and there are a few folks around the horseshoe that have that labor background and understand this stuff and can help get all this stuff done. So really appreciate it. But, you know, the other thing that we've alluded to but I haven't really discussed yet is we've got this election coming up, 2023 election. And again, you know, there's a county executive race, but out of 18 legislators, how many are up for election this year?
All 18.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
myself.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and that's a lot, you know, and you've been involved in AME's process. We try to be exhaustive. We ask a lot of questions. We allow for some interaction, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, but we also ask questions and we do polling and we really, you know, we spent probably the better part of a month looking at legislative candidates and county executive candidates. And some of those, we were able to make endorsements, such as yourself. It's very easy to do simply because of the working relationship, the fact that you're always willing to listen, right? That's very important to us. We know we can't get yes to everything that we're talking about because, again, like we talked about, these issues tend to be more complicated than just our perspective. But you always listen. You always work us into the conversation. And again, your expertise, you know, talking about something as big and as complicated and as potentially daunting as the budget, to know that we have somebody in you at the helm that's going to be able to manage that process handily. So that's, you know, easy for AME to endorse you. But why don't you give us your take, you know, again, as presiding officer, you've got 17 other districts to kind of concern yourself with.
So we going to the Republican caucus for a moment. We had there's 11 Republicans, 7 Democrats, and from a labor perspective, it couldn't be better for people in labor. And from the labor caucus, I'm currently the president of Teamsters Local 707. Jim Mazzarella is a legislator. He's secretary treasurer of the ILA Local 338. You had Nick Caracapa, the former president of the utility workers, who represented all the workers in Suffolk County Water Authority. Right. And you have a lot of people that just came out of that are working people, you know, that have, you know, worked their whole lives. Then they're not been not a lot of professionals on our side, you know, and but people understand what people go through, and including, you know, your members. And so they are concerned about it. And so we have tell people we're not your father's Republican caucus. You know, we're viewing things a little differently. And I've had the ability, for the most part, to be able to speak with my caucus members to support things that we feel are important to labor and let them know that it's important that we do support the working men and women in Suffolk County. So, as you said, there's a couple of open seats this year. Mm-hmm. You know, we have on the East End, Al Krupski is running for Southold Town Supervisor. So we have an open seat there. Sarah Anker. She's termed out, and so that's an open seat, and as well as Kara Hahn, she is termed out as well, and then you have a couple. We have three races where the first time, first rerun elections for them. You have Dominic Thorne down in Patchogue, and you have Manny Esteban, and you have Stephanie Bontempi. In the Huntington area, you know, so there's a lot going on here in this year. Generally, you have a county executive race that's due to term limits, and so there's going to be a lot going on, a lot for AME to consider, you know, I think we've done a pretty good job on the Republican side to let people know that we want to work with you. We want to make sure that we look after your members to we have different things to look at than you're straight ahead. Just like when I'm on the Teamster side, I have one hat on and I'm going full steam ahead. Mm-hmm. And but we definitely are willing to listen, and that's almost everyone members of my caucus.
Yeah, no, and I would completely agree with that assessment. Number of conversations with the folks on the Republican side, you know, and sometimes I have to speak to, you know, we'll have members that are, you know, maybe they're Democratic leaning, but maybe more on the progressive side of things. And they say, well, how can we get behind folks that maybe have a conservative mentality? And, you know, I remind them that, you know, union folks worked really hard in their lifetime to establish pay and benefits and some footing in the community to have enough resources to give back to their community, whether that's in getting a new fence or getting involved, you know, on little league teams, volunteer firefighting, sure. all these various different things. And the idea that they want to conserve what they fought for is not so far-fetched.
Yeah.
It's not. So, you know, if you ever get involved in these types of arguments, I know I certainly do, and they say, well, you know, all unions should be, you know, very progressive. We want change. We want, you know, but we also want to protect what we've built. We want to bring more people into that shelter to say, hey, we can all do this together. We can grow as a people, but let's not destroy what we built.
And I tell unions all the time, including my own union, Teamsters Union, mm-hmm. and I stand up in front of them when I speak at the international conventions or mm-hmm. I say that it's not about the letter that's after your name. It's about what you do for working men and women.
Sure.
Should be the judge of how you should be viewed by labor unions.
Yeah. And listen, to that end, you know, you've done that in spades. Again, on the union side, also presiding officer as a legislator. And I want to thank you again for joining, always being a friend to our members, always having an open ear and working with us to help, you know, resolve some of the problems. So, you know, again... thank you for your time. I know how busy you are. This is going to be a crazy year for you, but even just now, things are very busy, so I appreciate you carving out some time to speak to us.
Thanks for having me. I always look forward to being on with you.
And to our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.